This is Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice. And now your host, the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith.
And I am the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith, and this is Rogue Talk for March 1st, 2019, and I'm so happy to be back in the chair. I missed you last week. We had a little replay. Unfortunately, I usually like to tell you everything that's going on, and we keep this show pretty personal. So I got a cortisone shot in my shoulder last week, and I decided I was just going to take it easy last week. So we had a good replay for you. I hope you enjoyed that. But we're back on the air live today, and I have got a great guest in studio today. She's a new friend of mine, someone I just met over the past month or so, but she wears a lot of hats, and I think you're going to enjoy getting to know her, and that's Kara Ayers. So we're going to talk to Kara a little bit later. She's all kinds of things. She's a rancher, she's an entertainer, substitute teacher, you name it. We could probably go on for a few minutes with all the things we've been talking about off air. I'm really excited to get to all of that. She also happens to be the mother of one of our basketball stars over there at Rogue River, Jonwyn Ayers. And so that's how I first got to know her. In fact, her husband was a big supporter of our broadcasts of the games. He would come over routinely and talk to me and tell me how much he appreciated us putting the games on the air. So, hey, anybody that treats me that nice, I've got to return the favor for sure. So we got Kara right here. We're going to talk to her. Before we get to that, we got a few things going on around town, and also news in the state. Some sad news this week, unfortunately, coming out of Salem. The Oregon Secretary of State, Dennis Richardson, passed away this past week. He passed away of brain cancer at the age of 69. And I got this from the KDRV.com website. Richardson was a Vietnam vet. He served as a combat helicopter pilot in Vietnam. He spent 30 years of his legal career in Central Point, and then he moved from his private career into his public service in 2003 when he became the representative of the 4th District in the State House of Representatives. And he did that. His public service career was about 19 years. He became the Secretary of State in 2016 after a failed bid for the governorship in 2014. He ran for the Secretary of State in 2016, and he served in that position until his recent death. And we had Carl Wilson on the show a couple of weeks back, and so what he had to say about Dennis kind of caught my eye, so that's what I've got for you here. Carl Wilson said, "We have suffered a great loss with the passing of Dennis Richardson. Dennis was a steadfast man who loved family, his country, the state of Oregon, and the people he served. This loss is a difficult one for all of us. His death will be deeply mourned by all of his former colleagues in the Oregon House of Representatives." So I thought those were touching words from Representative Wilson, and I thought it was appropriate, since we talked to Representative Wilson a couple weeks back, to hear what he had to say. And Dennis was the father of 9 children and the grandfather of 31 children, and he will be sorely missed. I never got the chance to meet him. Wish I had. He's a local guy, again, at Central Point. His district was a good part of Jackson and Josephine counties when he was a representative in the 4th District. And I wish I'd gotten to know him as a local guy, but he will definitely be missed. So a little more local, moving over to the high school, the Rogue River FFA is back in our news feed this week, and we got a couple of things to talk about with the FFA. Danny Herrings was the Rogue River Chapter's Member of the Month for February, so congratulations to Danny, and we'll be talking about Danny a little bit more here as we move along. But I got this from the Rogue River FFA Facebook page. They said that one of Danny's claims to fame is that while showing his turkey, that very same turkey ate his green hand degree pin. So he lost one of his FFA awards to the very turkey that was helping him earn other awards. So it was kind of a fun story related to Danny. And again, we're going to talk about Danny in just a bit as we get into the Chieftain Sports. But there was also a sectional leadership CDE for the FFA. And I've got all the results for you. And to no one's surprise, Rogue River was made a very good showing once again, and including some folks that will move on to the state competition later in the year. So in advanced parliamentary procedure, the team got second place, and that team was Gabe Tambellini, Savannah Stillwagner, Alyssa Wolf, Jonwyn Ayers, Cassidy Hager, and Diana Weilbacher. Beginning parliamentary procedure, the team got third place, and that was Wyatt Stillwagner, Amy Barnwell, Lila Braga, Erica Hansen, Jordan Pereira, and Mackenzie Sandoval. And going on to state with a first place in extemporaneous public speaking. That one is a mouthful. You probably have to learn to say that word as your first job of doing that competition, I would imagine. But that was Gabe Tambellini, who was first, and he goes on to state. Also going on to state with a second place in the beginning public speaking, Wyatt Stillwagner. Also moving on to state with a first place in sophomore public speaking, Jonwyn Ayers. And finally, prepared public speaking, Cora Clifford was second. She moves on to state, and Laura Howard was third. So a big congratulations to all of our students in FFA. They just continue to amaze me here, and that's why we bring them on the show when we do. And in fact, we'll probably have some of them back before the school year's over to talk about all the great things they're doing. We got kids heading to state in their competitions. We have a national competition coming up for soils that our kids qualified for. So just a lot of great things going on with the Rogue River FFA. So taking a look at Chieftain Sports, we missed a week. Excuse me, struggling with my voice today. So when we get Kara on here, we're going to let her talk more so that I can be quiet, because I've been struggling all day. But moving on to Chieftain Sports, because we missed a week, if you weren't aware, the girls headed to their conference playoffs. Unfortunately, they lost in a 38-35 game against Lakeview. And unfortunately for Lakeview, they went on to lose their opening round game of the state playoffs. But that left the girls one game short of getting into the state playoffs. But it was a really great season for Coach King and all the girls, and we're super proud of them. And really a successful season for both of the Chieftain basketball teams. The boys made great strides from a pretty disappointing finish last year. And so we're proud of all those kids. And we're looking forward. I was talking with Kara before the show started. We're really pretty optimistic about the girls' team for next year. We think they got a pretty good core there. They're going to lose a few seniors, but should be more exciting basketball going into next season, and we're looking forward to it. And finally, the wrestling finished up their season with the state championship. Chieftain sent three boys to the state championship: Dylan Hauser, Danny Herrinks, and Gabe Tambellini. And unfortunately, Gabe was not able to place in the state tournament, but Danny Herrinks was fourth at 285, and state champion Dylan Hauser at 182. And we knew that this was a possibility watching him all season long, but he delivered in the clutch and pulled out a state championship for Rogue River. So we're proud of the Rogue River wrestling team. They had a great, great season. We've been talking about it all year long here on Rogue Talk, and they finished strong. They were 10th in the state with only three wrestlers at the tournament, so that's a really good showing, and we are just super proud of the wrestling team. So that's going to be all I've got for you here in this first segment, kind of a short segment, but that'll leave us a lot more time to get to know our featured guest today, Kara Ayers. So we will take a break here and be back with more Rogue Talk. Don't go away.
You're listening to Rogue Talk
on 94.3 The Bridge.
More college basketball. Ninth-ranked Michigan over Nebraska, 82-53. Number 24, Wofford beat Chattanooga, 80-54. Number 25, Washington upset by unranked California, 76-73. In the National Hockey League yesterday, Islanders 6, Maple Leafs 1. It was Columbus over the Flyers 4-3 in overtime. Oilers 4, Senators 2. Boston beat the Lightning 4-1. Arizona 5, Canucks 2. Vegas over Florida 6-5 in the shootout. It was Dallas 4 and the Kings 3, that one in overtime. Major League Baseball news, Bryce Harper has one-upped Manny Machado in the Superstar Sweepstakes. The young star outfielder and the Philadelphia Phillies have agreed to a $330 million 13-year contract. It's the largest deal in baseball history. Harper's agreement surpasses the previous high for a free agent set last week when Machado signed for $300 million over 10 years with the Padres. This is SRN Sports.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk. And now joining me in the studio, as promised, the ever-talented and the lady that wears many, many hats.
That's true, for sure. I wear a lot of hats.
Kara Ayers. Kara, welcome to Rogue Talk.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. It's awesome to be here at the Bridge 94.3 in Rogue River.
We're so happy to have you here. And first of all, I got to say, if even a fraction of the people that have reached out on social media are listening right now, we've got quite a few listeners, and I want to give them a shout out. We're happy to have you here. I know Kara's got friends all over the country, basically. So we're happy for any of you that are listening online. We hope that the wait wasn't too long there. Some of my first segments can tend to go really, really long, especially when I start talking politics, but we avoided that today. So Kara, of course, as I mentioned, I met you at first because you are the mother of Jonwyn Ayers, one of our super basketball stars on the Lady Chieftains. But I've come to find out that you've got a lot of stuff you do. Now, when I mentioned your name in my house, my son immediately said, well, yeah, she's a substitute teacher. I know who she is. And of course, he's friends with your daughter now, too. But he knew you actually before that because you've been a substitute ag teacher. Before we get into all of the things you're doing, and I'm going to hit on most of them at least, tell us a little about yourself, what your background is, your education. I know you obviously, to be a teacher, you have some education in agriculture. So tell us about your family and about your background.
Sure, I am happy to. I was lucky enough to grow up in a small community, much like Rogue River, Sweet Home, Oregon, in the Mid-Willamette Valley. And it was kind of a dream come true. We moved there from upstate New York when I was 9 years old. And so I started third grade in Sweet Home and stayed there all through graduation. And so many of my close friends couldn't wait to leave Sweet Home. And I was the kid that still thought Sweet Home was the greatest, even at graduation. I love the farm that Mom and Dad bought. It was like a dream come true coming from the suburbs of New York City. And I loved, you know, the cattle and my 4-H projects. And I loved the small, close-knit community that I felt. You know, our friends and our neighbors felt like family. Maybe because we didn't have any other than the four of us moving to Sweet Home. But it was a great experience. I dove into my cattle project as a kid. I was lucky enough to have parents that supported me, and I bought my first Angus heifer when I was 9 years old. I paid $375 for her, and it took me 2 years to pay her off because I got 50 cents a day from my dad to feed the cows. So I finally paid off Sue after 2 years, and that first registered Angus female that I bought in 1980 was really good to me. She had heifer after heifer after heifer. And so I built a small herd by the time I was, you know, 18 and leaving for college. I had a nice little group of females. And I knew at that point, after working with cattle and had a really great relationship with our local veterinarian, Dr. Dave Larson, and my 4-H leader, Ag Marble, who taught me so much about the cattle business, I decided that I wanted to study animal science. when I went off to college. And so I went to Oregon State University and got my BS in animal science and was lucky enough to work at almost every food animal facility. You know, I fed the cattle. I worked at the packing plant. I was egg quality control, and I fed the chickens. I was the weekend hog feeder. I even spent a little bit of time at the dairy. So I became well-rounded there, and all during that time, I also was singing to the cows one day, and a gentleman walked through the barn that was going to OSU, and he was putting together a country western band, and he asked me, he heard me singing, if I would audition for his band. And so I said, sure. You know, I was 19. And I thought, how cool, I'll get into bars at 19.
And you can sing in front of people.
Right. Which that part scared me, because actually I'm an introvert extrovert. I'm actually a little bit shy naturally. So to get me up on stage was a chore. And I can remember I got the gig with a band called Wild Ride, which I was very embarrassed of the name of the band. And... And our first gig was like in Lebanon at Humpty's Dump. I'm serious. That was the name of the bar that we first played. And I was so nervous singing that I beat the tambourine on my thigh that I had a bruise the size of a dinner plate on my thigh. But I survived it. I survived the crowd of five drunk people and moved on and worked with Wild Ride for 4 years. In that time, I also decided to stay on at Oregon State, and I was their student beef herdsman, and I opted to get my master's degree, and they kind of built a program for me. It was a master's of agriculture, but it centered around education, and I was sure to be able to teach ag by the time I got out, and I was lucky enough to kind of land what my dream job was at the time, and that was a position at Lynn Benton Community College teaching animal science as well as coaching the livestock judging team.
Wow.
And that's what I got to do.
Well, that's an impressive start to your adult life, I have to say. That's and that covers a lot of different things that you had going on there, and it goes into some of the things you're still doing now. Now you moved your business. You had a we talked off air. In fact, we had a really nice conversation yesterday, and I got to know you a little bit more before we brought you on here today. But you had your Angus business in Montana.
Yes.
And then you brought it here, basically, or started it here. And so that's one of the things you do. You have Ayers Angus, and you do that with your husband. That's right.
Yes. Yep. We changed the name Ayers Angus at the time of my marriage in 1996. So
excellent.
Pascal R. Angus, I was before then. But I always do say that Tom married me for the cows, and they really are still mine, if anybody out there is wondering.
Yeah. And I don't think he married you for the cows, but we'll go with that. I think that was the fringe benefit of marrying you. So you're a substitute ag teacher now. You had been teaching at the college, you said, Lynn Benton.
Yes, and I have been a substitute teacher for, gosh, now 16 plus years, probably. I got to stay at LB for 4 years. And then I started to follow Tom's career around, which moved us away from the Willamette Valley. And actually, we've moved several times with the cows. I think it might put us in an insane category of how many times we've moved with a farm and, you know, 50 to 75 head of mother cows. And I feel like I'm done moving. However, with pasture prices here so high, maybe I'm not done. But we'll see.
Pasture prices are about like housing prices. If you're looking for a rental in this area, you're struggling. So apparently pasture prices are the same.
They are. And you know, it's a common theme that I'm hearing. I know when Tom and I left Montana 3 years ago and came back to Oregon, and we were in Montana for 11 years, and it was a wonderful time. It really was. A lot of great cattle, a lot of great cattle people, and I think it expanded us in a lot of different ways. And one is me creating Care About Ag and Tom creating his auction business. I think if we had stayed in Oregon, we would have been probably employed, where employment is really tough to find in Montana. So it kind of forces you to become creative. But I'm hearing it from all over with agriculture, particularly small ag, which cattle ranching is mostly owned by families and is a smaller business than most people give it credit for. But it's tougher and tougher to make it. And I think our dairymen have felt that for years, unless you go really big, that it's tougher and tougher with costs, with feed, with land. You know, when we were in Montana, we looked at places that had a lower cost of living, like Kentucky or Missouri, and we had some thoughts, and we went through that country, and it's beautiful, and the people were great, but you know, our home is Oregon, and this is where our family is, and John, when was at that adolescent age, and we wanted to come home for her to be in high school and surrounded by friends and family that have been with us throughout our life. So I'm glad we made the move to come back to Oregon. I do absolutely love it here, and I love the Oregon spirit, as wild as it may be here from time to time, particularly when you're in agriculture. But it's been an interesting ride for sure.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting you mentioned the struggles with the dairy business. When I grew up in California, I was kind of a suburban kid, but my dad's business, we dealt a lot with dairies. And we had an interesting advantage for the smaller dairies around there. There was a very big cooperative, and it made it worthwhile for most of the small dairies to work together. And I don't see as much of that here. So I never really gave that a lot of thought until you just mentioned that. But I could see where smaller dairies might struggle a little bit around here. And the population centers are smaller than California. And so right. you're struggling for less business than you would be somewhere like where I grew up. And so, yeah, I just found that interesting that you kind of touched on that, because I hadn't really thought about it, but I realized that all the dairies that I dealt with when I was working for my dad in California were all part of a cooperative, and that made a big deal. It made it a lot easier for them to stay in business.
Right. Well, I think it's a national tragedy that we don't talk about is, you know, a little bit of the end of, you know, small time mom and pop farmers in our communities. I think a lot of times we look to the agriculturalists in our communities as pillars of people that we can learn things from. They're gritty, salt of the earth, common sense people that usually aren't too high drama. Unless they have their own entertainment business.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
Then they might be dramatic. But so it's sad, and you know, I mean, not to bring up sad statistics, but you know, suicide is so much on the rise in the dairy subculture, because people aren't only losing their business, they're losing a legacy that has been handed down to them for so many generations, and so they feel like a failure to not just themselves, but to their parents and grandparents, and when they lose the land and they lose the business, and of course the cow herd is a whole nother heartbreak in itself. So
yeah, well, and not to get too political, but one of the things that we see in farming, whether it's cattle or whether it's, you know, growing vegetables or whatever, it's hard for people to pass their farms on to the next generations, because a lot of states have we have the death taxes that
right.
We've had a federal one, and we have state ones, and it's not, you know, land is not liquid. You can't easily pull money out of your land to pay those taxes. And so you see a lot of people lose the land. I had a friend that I worked with when I was in California that her family had, you know, a very nice ranch, had a lot of property. And when grandma died, they had to sell the property because they couldn't afford the death taxes. So they had to sell it and liquidate it. They did very well with selling it, but they didn't want to sell it. They wanted to stay on that land, and they just couldn't afford to do it. So I imagine that contributes to what you're talking about. That, and again, I'm not trying to get political. I'm just, it's one of those things where we're digging into people's livelihood, and you know, you hear a lot of people say, well, you know, the people that inherit that, they didn't earn that. Well, first of all, they did, because in a lot of times they've done the hard work that goes on that land. You know, they're a part of that business long before they ever inherit whatever is there.
Right.
But also, that's all been taxed already. It doesn't matter who ends up owning it. The person that purchased it, and the person that worked it, and the person that was on it all that time. They paid all of their taxes. Why are we taxing them again just to see them lose the land because they can't afford it? And, you know, you hear so much of the same people that would be in favor of high taxes are the same people that say, you know, we should be taxing the rich. And it's like, these aren't rich people. They may have a lot of value in their land, but that's not a liquid asset for them. They need that land to work on. So it just seems ironic that the same people that would decry this are the ones that are causing it, is right. What I guess I'm trying to say. So I find it interesting, but a little bit of a tangent there. But it's a sad thing because agriculture is so important, and I get frustrated when I listen to some of the people that know nothing about it that rail on about things they don't understand.
Right.
And if they would really get to know people like you and get to know it better, they would understand that they really don't know what they're talking about.
Right. And there's a large undercurrent against agriculture from the subcultures that, you know, want us to, for instance, not eat any animals, and how much greenhouse gases they are producing versus what are the facts of how much greenhouse gases cattle produce. But that does get political. But my heart and soul is behind agriculturalists, and those people that I've met that work the land and run cattle are some of the most heartfelt, gritty, hardworking, common sense and bright people I've met, which is why I did create Care About Ag. My singing through the years and my entertainment has morphed from starting out as, you know, a band gig that would gig from 9 to 2 a.m. at smoky bars into something where, you know, I conscientiously write for an agricultural crowd. I do other crowds as well. I've done, you know, medical instruments or even a 3D printing company, or I've, you know, parties for teachers, or I'm doing a real estate deal, but party in a few months. But for the most part, I love singing to the crowd of agriculturalists. Plus, I understand their lifestyle.
Yeah, sure. And that's where your heart is. But I was going to get into, you're pretty entrepreneurial, and you've got some other things that you're going, that you're invested in, you're doing right now.
Yes.
But since you brought up the Care About Ag, let's go ahead and dive into that. We can get back to these other things. But this was one of the main things that you and I had talked about that I found really interesting, being in a business where I'm recording and doing things like this. It always interests me, the entertainment. And I'm not in entertainment. I'm more of a media person, I guess you would say. But, and again, I'm a volunteer. But so tell us more about this. It's Care About Ag.
Yes.
And you, from looking at the brochure, you do musical comedy, you do singing. So what exactly is it that when you get a call that we'd like to have you come to our event, what is it that you talk about with them? How do you, because it sounds like you kind of customize it to what they're wanting. And so how does that process work?
So that process works is that usually I'm called by somebody who had a butt in a seat in one of my previous shows, because my marketing is not what it should be. But
we're going to work on that. You and I, we share some things in common.
That's an awesome plan.
We've got some things we both need to work on. So we're going to be, we'll be each other's support person.
I will. Agree to that for sure. So usually someone calls me, and sometimes it's years later. You know, I saw you 3 years ago at Country Natural Beef, and I'd like to bring you in for Agribeef or for Harney County Cattlemen or, you know, California Cattlemen. And so they call me, and I usually put on a 45 minute to an hour show. I will research that said organization from looking at their websites to knowing kind of what their goals or themes are, or if they have someone that they'd like to honor that evening, or if there's, you know, there's going to be VIPs in the audience, or I'll ask about their board of directors, and I'll just take some notes and I'll kind of brainstorm about that. And I do have, you know, of course, since I mostly sing to agricultural groups, I have a good skeleton of 50 to 60% of my material already. And what my material is primarily are parodies of songs. So I'm a little bit like a weird owl, but I'm a cow gal. So it's a little, it's
weird
a little
owl, the weird cow gal. Yeah. That can't rhyme.
Right? See, it does. You know, for instance, one of my favorite parodies that I wrote with my partner, I was Take Two Productions before I became Care About Ag, with my partner, Beth Schreiber, who's a second grade teacher in Stevensville, Montana. And there's no way I would have ever gone solo if I hadn't have started with a partner, just to step on stage with, just to play back and forth with, the courage piece that you need to think that, you know, you have something that's worthy of watching for an hour and paying for. So Beth was instrumental in that. And she was classically trained in music. And she's also just incredible on stage. She was my rock, whereas I was a bit more of the loose cannon on stage. I might not stick to script too well, but I tend to read a crowd and I come up with our most goofiest stuff probably. And I think Beth would agree with that as well. But we did parodies together, and I still do as a solo act. For instance, one of my favorite parodies that we wrote about for Montana was Meat Made in Montana instead of Meet Me in Montana. So, and I could go on with a list of songs like that, but that's kind of what I do. If anyone out there is familiar with what, like, the Peterson Farm Brothers do, it's very similar to what I do and have been doing for a really long time. They're just a lot better getting it out on video.
Well, and that's something that you shared a YouTube, not a video really, but an audio. They're all videos, but
right,
there was no actually accompanying video of a song you did. Tell me about that. That was more of a serious kind of a situation, but tell us about that.
Right, I shared with you my perfect temple recording. And that was a fun little project that I had. I watched the movie about Temple Grandin. Have you ever seen that HBO?
I have not. I'm familiar
with
who she is and what that movie's about, but I have not seen it. I'd actually like to see it, but I have not.
It's super inspirational, and I think it should be shown in most classrooms in high school, as well as anyone should watch the show about Temple Grandin. She is now a Dr. Temple Grandin. She's a professor at Colorado State, and she's autistic. But she really innovated cattle working facilities, you know, back 30 years ago. And to do that as a woman who, you know, was autistic, and we didn't even use that term. You know, I'm sure they thought of her as special needs or in some way disabled. But she was brilliant, just communicated differently with folks. But anyways, I watched her movie and it really touched me. And I really thought, you know, on days that I'm down and I think that I can't get certain things done, and I'm feeling a little bit victimhood, this movie was so inspirational to see a woman go far in the beef industry who had special needs. You know, why am I crying in my soup? So I watched the movie and it really spoke to me, because her favorite song is played at her graduation at the end, and it's You'll Never Walk Alone. It's from Carousel. Mm-hmm. The musical, Rodgers and Hammerstein, and I happened to be Aunt Nettie in Carousel in high school. So I thought this was, of course, a spiritual message from God that I needed to contact Temple Grandin and I needed to write her a song. So I morphed a song for her, because that's what I do best, probably, is take other people's songs and morph them into what I want to talk about. And so I took Pink's I'm Perfect and I smashed it together with You'll Never Walk Alone, and I created the song that I call Perfect Temple, and I sent it to her for Christmas as a gift, and she called me, and she thanked me for it, and she thought it was really great, and she then asked me, you know, what kind of facilities I had for my cattle. And so the conversation went quickly to where my cows were at the time. And it was really fun. And I got to tell her, I need to get him out of the hills. I was in Montana and winter was coming. I said, I really need to get him out of the hills because winter's coming. She said, you better do that tomorrow. So Temple told me to get on it. But amazingly, I'm not sure how that song got into the hands of Jamie Wood. But Jamie is one of the directors of Montana Special Olympics. Uh-huh. And we've been girlfriends since we were, you know, even before teenagers, because we both show Angus cattle. And even though I was an Oregon girl and she was a Montana girl, we knew each other through cattle showing. And Jamie got a hold of that recording and she played it for the office. And she called me. She said, we were all in tears after we heard your recording. Could we possibly get you to do this for the opening ceremonies for Montana Special Olympics? And I said, sure. And I really didn't understand it was going to be such a huge gig. I didn't realize it was going to be at Metro Park. There was going to be 4,000 people in the audience and that they were going to hire dancers to dance behind me. So it was like my Celine Dion moment. It was so special. And I'll never forget it. And anyways, that's the perfect temple. I rarely perform that at my shows.
Well, I put my AirPods in, as I generally do when I want to listen to things at home and not interrupt everybody else's TV watching or Instagram videos or whatever they happen to be doing. And I had to get up and leave the room. And I'm not saying what happened when I left the room, but let's just say that my son and my wife were in the room and I didn't want them to see me. It's a very touching song, and the video, the connection to the Special Olympics is really cool. And I've talked about this on this show before. When I was in high school, one of my favorite classes I had was as a TA in the special education class. Uh-huh. And in fact, we talked about this when I had the Miss Rogue River girls on, because one of the contestants works with a nonverbal student, and I was really impressed with that from a high school kid to take that on as kind of a tutor for a nonverbal student. And I just remembered that I kind of backed into that class. I needed a class. I was a senior and I had all of my stuff. In fact, I had taken U.S. history in the summer so I wouldn't have to write a term paper. And so I had room for another class, and I really liked the teacher. So I asked him if I could be a TA for his class, and he said, sure. And I sort of screwed up because it was fourth period, and they had a bakery in that class, but they were all done at fourth period. They would bake the first two periods and sell their baked goods at break.
Nice, and then eat them at lunch.
And then everything was gone by the time I got there. I'm like, you didn't save me any cookies. And it was kind of fun. There was two girls in there that were like best friends, and I think I had joked one time that you guys never save me any cookies. So the next time I came to class, they had saved me some cookies. And it was just one of my favorite times of the year. So it was a beautiful song. You have a beautiful singing voice, by the way. And that tie-in with the Special Olympics just kind of struck me, and I was really impressed. So that was why I had to bring that up, is I just really enjoyed that. But getting back to your care about ag, and we're going to have to finish with this, and then we'll get to some other stuff after the break. But so you said, you know, your music, 50-60%, you already have pretty much ready to go. So how do you decide what to do for the rest of that?
Good question. So I check out their website, and I kind of get a feel for, you know, whether it's their motto or their theme or something that I think that they're working for. And I'll have, you know, those words in my head, and I'll try to think of popular songs that have a word that rhymes with that in its chorus line. So, you know, and I have an idea book too, that I write down songs that might work for things. I came up with, We've Got the Beef. We've Got the Beef years before I ever got to do a show for Agribeef, and it worked so great for Agribeef, for Certified Angus Beef, and I've gotten to do parties for both of them. So it's just kind of a rhyming game. I work a lot with the free app Rhyme Zones, and I'll have certain words in front of me, and I will you know, plug them in and come up with other words, and then sometimes I might even Google titles. It matters, you know, do I want to go country? Do I want to go pop? Do I want to go, you know, 50s, 60s theme? And really, my shows, I love all kinds of music. You would think I would concentrate more on country music since I'm in agriculture, but I don't. Probably 30% maybe of my music is country music that I do. And I do love certain standards. I love Patsy Cline. I always sang her with my band. But creativity, I don't think the person owns it. I don't think I own it. I think it's something that I tap into.
Sure.
In some
sure.
way. And so, and the fact that I'm using other people's material, you know, makes me less brilliant too. So I just have fun with words and I fit them in, and it's a great parody if the crowd appreciates the song already and it nails them in terms of what they are doing or attempting to do as a group, then it's a fit. So, anyways, that's kind of how I do it.
That's yeah. Oh, and that's perfect. And I hope I'm not speaking out of school a little bit here, but my guess is you're late 80s, early 90s girl, so
yes.
Probably some of those songs that you and I shared as kids. I was a little older than you, and I still am, as a matter of fact. I don't think that can change, actually, but yeah, we grew up with some of the same music, so it must be kind of fun to once in a while be able to grab one of those old tunes from our youth and kind of twist it up, and especially
it
if
is.
You have an audience that's close to our age, you know they're going to relate to it.
Yes, right.
So are there any of those that you can think of that you've done that kind of stand out in your mind? That
my 80s tunes?
Any of the old 80s tunes?
I can
think of some that we used to put new words to, but most of that was fairly inappropriate, so we won't repeat them here.
Right, we will do that. That'll be the midnight show here at the Bridge.
No, it won't even be that one.
It won't be the midnight. It'll be another radio station. I can't think off the top of my head.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I just thought, you know, some of those are really fun. Of course, at the same time, it'd be hard to do some of those because Weird Al's done them all. Weird Al made his living in the 80s, so
right. We've got the beat that had to be 80s,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, definitely.
Right.
Definitely.
So that works for, you know, We've Got the Beef or We've Got the Sheep. I've done that. I did Palpation Nation. That's a Janet Jackson song for, you know, the veterinarians that have to preg check, and that would work for any AI deal. But I've written two jukebox musicals, and that means that you take other people's music and you write a musical. And the second one that I've never performed, it's called Die Laughing, and it's all 80s music, but it's not agricultural. But I could certainly brainstorm and think of some of those songs that are from that show.
All right. Well, you mentioned AI, and a lot of people listening. Now, the people that are listening because you're on the show probably know what AI is.
Right.
I didn't know until you got here, but we're going to talk about that right after the break.
Do-do-do-do.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. Pakistan has handed over an Indian pilot captured after his plane was shot down by the Pakistani military this week amid a dramatic confrontation between the two nuclear-armed rivals over the disputed Kashmir region. Pakistani officials brought the pilot to the border crossing with India at Wagah and handed him back to India on Friday. As the White House gears up for the 2020 campaign, it's pressing the case that Democrats are rallying behind what it's calling the policies of socialism. Vice President Mike Pence is using an appearance before the Conservative Political Action Conference to charge that Democratic priorities of Medicare for All and the Green New Deal show that Democrats are embracing the same tired economic theories that have impoverished nations and stifled the liberties of millions of people over the past century. On Wall Street, the Dow by 110 points, the Nasdaq rose 62. More details at srnnews.com.
Keeping you informed, giving you the good news. You're listening to 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice.
Oh, I wish there was a way to find out what events are going on in Rogue River.
There is.
There is?
Yeah, the website for 94.3 The Bridge.
They have Rogue River events on their website?
Yeah, for Gold Hill, Weimar, and Grants Pass, too. You can even submit your own event for everyone in town to see. And if it's on the website, they automatically talk about it on the radio, too.
That's awesome. What's the address to this site?
It's 943thebridge.com.
N-I-N.
No. Just type the numbers, 943thebridge.com.
Oh, 943thebridge.com. Hey, look, they have the latest local news on there, too.
They have everything on there. 943thebridge.com.
My savings are gone.
Okay, where were they last?
Here, right before I spent them on that vacation to Aruba.
Weird. Not weird. Not saving now means no money later. For free ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
With an SRN News Business Brief, I'm George Bonzani. So how is the economy with the end of February upon us? Fourth quarter GDP is in.
The Commerce Department says growth in the gross domestic product the final 3 months of the year was 2.6%, the slowest pace since the beginning of the year. The government shutdown played a role, with slower consumer spending cited as the biggest factor. The 35-day shutdown shaved an estimated one-tenth of a point from fourth-quarter growth. For all of 2018, GDP growth came in at just under 3%.
That's correspondent Mike Hempen. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell still says the U.S. economy is in a good place, speaking to the Citizens Budget Council in New York City yesterday. As for the major exchanges, they were down yesterday slightly, but the market itself is up over 11% for the first 2 months of 2019, the best New Year start since 1991. With SRN Business, I'm George Bonzani.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk, and continuing with me in the studio. I didn't scare her off after that first segment, so she's back for more Kara Ayers. And when we went to the break, we mentioned AI, and we're not talking about artificial intelligence, although
mine's real.
Yeah, a lot of people think of that when they hear AI, at least these days, you know, but this is more of an agricultural term, and it relates to one of the businesses that you're involved in. So tell us, one, what is AI? And two, what is the business that you're involved with?
Totally. So AI is artificial insemination, and it's a way that a lot of cattlemen and dairymen breed their females, at least the first or second try in the breeding season, is they will artificially inseminate them with semen from bulls that we couldn't necessarily afford. We can breed to bulls that, you know, there was just recently at good old SAV, Angus Valley, a bull that sold for, you know, $1.5 million. What's really great is that I can, you know, get a straw of semen from him for around, you know, $50 to $100 and breed a cow with it. And so I do that. And it's a skill that my mom did. So she kind of passed it down. I actually went to AI school with her when I was 9 years old and went with good old Henry Yeager at Select Sires. And then I went again when I was probably 22 and Henry Yeager was still teaching from Select Sires. And I was up in North Clackamas when I took the class. But anyways, my AI kit is my mom's old kit. It's got Irma Pascalar etched in the side of it, and I wouldn't have it any other way. And I artificially inseminate cows here in Southern Oregon, not only for myself, but I do it as a business. There's a few of us here in Southern Oregon that do it. There's not a lot of people. I know Kathy White also is a great AI technician down here. Sam Collier is a AI technician. I'm sure there's a few others that I'm not mentioning, and it's just because I don't know you. But it's a great way to grasp those genetics that you couldn't otherwise afford. And I think what people may not understand that don't raise cattle is that we are constantly striving to improve and make cattle more efficient and have a smaller carbon footprint. We want them to be able to gain pounds on less feed and in less time while still maintaining health and longevity and soundness, docility. All of these traits are super important, and we look at them very scientifically. And most of these traits even have a statistic put on them. If you look through our books, it looks a little bit like baseball statistics. So we have all of these traits measured from birth weight to yearling weight to milking ability. And we can certainly match up your cow with her best date for the night and hopefully make a beautiful baby calf, 9.5 months later.
Well, we were talking off air, and again, if you're tuning in because you know Kara's on the show today, you might know some of this stuff because you've probably grown up in the ag industry. I talked to her about it before the show started. And if you're wondering what entails artificial insemination of a cow. Let's just say they don't make gloves long enough for me to try this. I'm just going to put it to you that way. But really an interesting science and an interesting thing that you do. And your business that you have now, ST Genetics?
Yes, I am an independent sales rep for ST Genetics. They're a fairly new semen company. And what's so exciting about the team at ST is that we kind of have a little bit of a corner on the innovative research on sexing semen, whereas before it was kind of done with centrifuge and might injure the semen quite a bit, or there might be a lot of dead cells within the semen. Our method of sexing semen is different and actually uses things that are more have to do with magnetic pull, and we have no dead cells, hopefully, or very few dead cells within the sample. So it's very concentrated. Our conception rates are really similar to what conventional AI straws would be. And sexing is kind of new to be available to the public. It's been a technology that has been around, but to have it be economical, affordable, I guess is the word I'm looking for, has really just come along in the last, 3 to 5 years. And ST kind of, I think, when you look at all of the different semen companies, has a bit of a corner on the best quality sexed semen. And it's important for small breeders like myself. For instance, when I'm looking at particularly my, I need to know what sells best for me, and what sells best for Tom and I are really good females. So I like to buy sex semen that's female based. If you have a bull sale, you might want to buy sex semen that's to the bull calves, because it's where your bread and butter is in the industry. But it's kind of nice to be able to drop semen in a cow that's 10 or 12 years old. She's going to be retired soon, and I know that I'm going to get a heifer calf out of her in the next few years to replace her and her wonderful genetics and disposition in the herd. So it's kind of fun to come up with your own calf crop that you wanted instead of just wishing for a heifer.
Yeah, and it sounds like a really, really interesting business. And unfortunately, we are just going to run out of time. There's so much more I could talk to you about. In fact, we didn't get near as deep into Care About Ag as I would like to. We've got about 20 seconds left.
Okay.
Can you let them know if they're interested in any of the things you're doing, whether it's Care About Ag or it's ST Genetics, how can they get a hold of you?
They can get a hold of me by calling me on my cell phone. It's 406-531-6131, or they can find me on Facebook, Cara Ayers. They could find me at Care About Ag or at Ayers Angus, all on Facebook.
Perfect. And that's all the time we've got. Thank you, Cara, for being here.
Thanks,
everybody.
Jeff.
Be good to one another.
You've been listening to Rogue Talk.
Listen to Rogue Talk with Jeff Smith, Fridays at 3 p.m. right here on Rogue River's Hometown Voice.
94.3 The Bridge.
Or on demand at 943thebridge.com.